Fred, what have you done now?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. We're back here with another episode. I hope you enjoyed last week's show with Chingo Bling. Yes, Chingo Bling came on the show to talk about his new special, They Can't Deport Us All. Really enjoyed having Chingo on the show. Great guy, great interview. He really funny dude, and he's doing a lot of stuff. I think he's out of the country right now working on some stuff. So shout out to Chingo Bling. One more time, but we have a great show for you today, right off the heels of the Warriors, the Golden State Warriors becoming the NBA champions for the second time in the last 3 years, Kevin Durant getting his first NBA title. I plan on talking about this later in the week, perhaps, maybe even next week, but that might be a little far out. I'm thinking I'm going to talk about it later this week with my homie Roosh Williams, but that's to come. But hey, let me not waste any time, because I have a really special guest who's going to join me here today on the show. This guy's name is Rex Andrews. For those of you who aren't familiar with him, he is the Reality Wrestling Texas champion. He is a phenomenal professional wrestler. I actually had this conversation over the weekend over a round of golf. I said that not only is Rex, in my opinion, you know, one of the greatest wrestlers at Reality Wrestling, not only is he one of my favorite wrestlers at Reality Wrestling, Rex Andrews is one of my favorite wrestlers. Like, period. I have the privilege of getting to call some of his matches alongside Matt Topolsky at the Reality Wrestling tapings and on the show. And I sit there and I watch him and I'm like, God, this guy is so good. And Rex and I kind of started Reality Wrestling around the same time. We get into it all. But I really had fun recording this interview with him a couple months ago, and he really opened up about a lot of things that are, I know, hard to talk about, and he actually lived out one of my, like, worst fears in life, and you'll hear what that is. You might figure it out for yourself, but I really want to take this time to thank Rex for being honest, for being open, and for taking the time to sit down with me when he had so much else to do on the day of the show. And like I said, I really, really appreciated it. And let me not waste any more time, because I have a tendency to ramble. So let's get into it right now. This is my conversation with the Reality Wrestling Texas champion, Rex Andrews. Enjoy. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the podcast. I am Brad Gilmore. Right now, I'm excited. I'm excited because in the times I've done interview shows, I've really never gotten to sit down and talk to somebody from Reality Wrestling, really in depth, you know, short little interviews here and there on the Heated Conversations radio show and podcast. But right now, currently sitting across from me, the day of the show that we're shooting Reality Wrestling, is the Reality Wrestling, the first ever Reality Wrestling Texas champion and a former two-time Reality Wrestling television champion, Rex Andrews. Rex, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being a guest. You know, this is going to be a fun show because I feel like you and I feel like our stories somewhat in wrestling are parallel because we're around the same age, right? How old are you?
24.
Yeah, 24 as well. So
yeah,
same age. We came in almost at the exact same time. Right. I think you were here a month or two before.
Yeah. We've been around Reality Wrestling for a while, right?
Yeah. So about 4 or 5 years, something like that?
Yeah, my second run. I came here initially a little bit before that.
Okay. But yeah, okay, but your run,
full-time run, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, we've had a lot of – I feel like we've grown together. You've obviously gotten – you know, I was going to say this when we had you on Heated Conversations recently. You, over the years – and this is a very strange thing to say, I think. But you, your body has changed so much within 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Like when you first came, you were kind of a scraggly –
I was
dude,
a kid, man.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We were both kids. We were like 19,
exactly,
or whatever,
yeah,
18,
yeah.
19. But you're like a scraggly dude. Like, you know, no real muscle definition.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of a dude in some trunks.
Just a guy just taking up a spot. That's
just
all.
Taking up a spot on the roster.
That's it.
But you know, but now I've seen like you've grown in height since then, right?
I don't think so. I think it's just
you look taller.
Yeah, I think it's just part of, you know.
Because I'm 6 foot, so you have to be looking what, 6'2"?
I'm 6'1", I think.
6'1"?
Yeah, yeah.
And you've put on a massive amount of size.
Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah.
So when you came in, like when you were 19, how much did you weigh?
Oh man, I was like 180, I think.
180, like a buck 80. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is still heavier than I am currently. And you weigh now?
210. Yeah, so it's a big difference. But, you know, those formative years, man, the early 20s, right? That's what it's about. I mean, if you're going to do wrestling, you can't stay at 180 forever.
Well, you know, you can if you're a commentator. You can be at 168.
Fair, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're perfect for that spot.
But to me, it's just – it's crazy. So, like, what is your regimen? Because to me – I know how to put weight on,
yeah,
but not muscle. I know how to eat a lot, you know, and get fat, but I don't know how did you learn to go from that 19-year-old kind of scraggly dude who's just taken up a spot on the roster to actually, and we'll get to your career like inside the ring, but actually looking the part. How did you get there? Like, what was the regimen?
So it started when I first moved out here, you know, being that skinny kid and realizing I didn't have a chance doing what I was doing. I hired a personal trainer and I worked with him for a few months and realized that we had a pretty good spot, or like,
if y'all can hear that, by the way, that's a beautiful song that's being sung.
Yeah, it's
we're here on
America.
Show day.
Yeah,
they might not even be able to hear it, but it's beautiful. So
I
continue.
Hope not. Yeah, but yeah, I realized he had a pretty good gig, and it kind of fit in line with what I was trying to do. So I started studying personal training, and then made that my full time gig while I was pursuing wrestling. So I got the basics on like how to put on the muscle mass, how to work out, and things like that, and then just the diet kind of came with it. And I just kind of built a regiment from there.
Now, let's go back for a second, because you're not from Houston, like you said, when you came down here. You're from Dothan, Alabama.
Yeah, small town.
Small town, and it's, what is it, southern Alabama, right?
Yeah, southeast.
Southeast Alabama. Because I always ask you this question. My grandmother was born in Decatur, Alabama.
Yeah, it's like right down the road.
Yeah, it's not too far, right?
Right.
And my great-uncle was like the longest-running mayor of Decatur, Alabama. And so whenever I think of Alabama, I always ask anybody if they know where Decatur is.
Yeah.
So Dothan, Alabama, small town, population if you had a guess.
Oh, man. I don't know. There's like one Walmart in 100 miles.
Okay. There you go.
Whatever the size would be of that.
is it like the stereotypical everyone knows everyone?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, graduating class of like 60 people.
Oh, really? 60?
Yeah.
60 people.
60 people. That's it.
So, okay, I have to ask the obvious question. Like, did everyone have the same girlfriend at one point?
Oh, yeah. Like, you just go through the rotation. Everybody gets mad at each other. And you're like, well, hey, man, there's four girls a date.
Because they do that in high school. Like, in my high school, it was a graduating class of 1,000.
Yeah.
And it was still everyone messed with the same girl. I don't understand what that's about.
You have your small groups, and it's just like, hey, man, this is easy. I already know them.
So Dothan, Alabama. So I guess there's like three schools.
Yeah, that's it.
Elementary, middle, and high school.
Right.
And then so you graduate. I guess you're 18. And when did it come to you? I know it was probably when you were a kid.
Yeah,
you got into wrestling like we all did.
Right.
When was it, though, you're like, I want to do this for my profession?
I said when I was 9. Like, I think one of the first times that I sat down and watched wrestling was Brock Lesnar and Hulk Hogan. And I saw that segment on SmackDown, and I was like, man, that's amazing. And I was just, like, hooked in from there. And I just, you know, from that point on, I was just, like, wrestling was all I wanted to watch, all I wanted to do. And, I told my dad, I think, within a month of starting watching it, like, I'm going to do this as a really small 9-year-old kid. And, you know, of course, he's giving the dad talk, no, you're not. That's stupid. Don't do it. You're, you know, whatever. But I just kind of never let go of that. And when I was 16, I started wrestling with a small company out in Alabama, and then like a few years in, realized that to make it bigger, I had to come to a bigger stage and have better training.
So how did you figure out, like, I'm going to go see Booker T? Because to me, when you hear about wrestling schools, you know, you always hear, and no disrespect to anybody, but you always hear about, like, some dude who may have been in WWF,
right,
like, for a cup of coffee and had a couple of job matches, has a school down the road, and you got to charge $5,000 to do.
Right.
So how did you, you know, for me, knowing Booker T has a school has to be for a wrestler, man, like, that's where I need to go. Because it, to me, it's so crazy that Booker, why would you want to be trained by anybody who wasn't there and did everything that you hope to accomplish in wrestling.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And especially if you want to do this as a career, someone who is financially successful.
Yeah.
Like maybe, okay, if you're a fan of a guy and like he opens a school and you want to go train with him because you like the style of wrestling he did, great. But did it make him money? Did it make him Did it draw? No, probably not. Like, there's very few styles of wrestling that work on a grand scale, and like Booker definitely knows how that works. You know what I mean? And
so how did you find out that he had a school?
I was just so obsessed with wrestling and always online. And I remember when he opened the school, seeing like all the headlines pop up. I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, it's not something I can do right now. I think I was, again, 16 at the time. But when it came time when I was like, okay, I need to go to a wrestling school. I need to get around people who are doing this seriously. I looked around and like ROH was the thing, ROH school. I looked at Mr. Hughes school.
Yes, okay.
In Atlanta because it was a little closer.
And no disrespect. No, he's a great trainer. I'm just saying. Yeah.
You know, just and then, you know, I was like, well, Booker, he's he's a world champion. He's done all these things. Like if there was a guy to learn from, that's who it is. And I just decided I was going to Houston.
And so you – I mean, did you literally say, I'm moving to Houston. I'm packing it up. I'm leaving – because I would imagine that a lot of people who are in Dothan, Alabama – remain in Dothan, Alabama.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it was I was just going to go do this on my own.
What'd your folks say? Did your folks like – I mean, were they like, whoa?
Like I had been wrestling for a couple of years and they'd seen me in like shady flea markets and wrestling like 35, 40-year-old dudes who were like crazy.
With 12 people in the
– Yeah, and like –
getting like a $10 payoff.
I mean, if you're going to do this, you might as well go do it right. So they were supportive and, you know, like I kind of explained who Booker was, what the situation was, and, you know – it's hard to come up in your own hometown, and like I think they knew that, and they were like, if you want to be successful, you got to get out of here.
I think it's so crazy, like the small town, like how people make it out of a small town, because I'm born here in Houston, right?
Right.
So I've always been – have access to mass media, lots of people, lots of choices, different schools, different entertainment,
yeah,
different everything, professional sports teams. Like,
absolutely, different like, influences.
Different influences,
yeah.
But it's always been there. So I always find it just interesting, like – because to me, to leave here and move somewhere else, to me, seems like a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm like, well, because if you're going to go from Houston, you got to go to like New York or Chicago,
right,
or L.A. or
yeah,
something
can't go
comparable.
To a small town and be
you
like,
don't go
oh,
to the
man.
Small town. But to me, I think it takes like a tremendous amount of courage to say, okay, I'm comfortable here. My family's here. I know everybody in this town.
Right.
I knew everybody in my graduating class. I dated every girl here. I'm comfortable with everything here. But let me pack up. Let me go somewhere where I know nobody at all. You didn't know Soul, right?
Nobody, yeah.
You didn't know anyone from the Indies or anything that was here?
Oh, no, no.
Not a single person. So when you walk in first day, you know, was it the school over there off 45?
It was Monroe.
Yeah, the Monroe School.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you walk in for the first time, like, who do you, did you talk to Booker first? Did you talk to Kevin?
I saw Ryan Davidson was in there, a guy named American Eagle, and Adrian Sensation. And, like, it was, I think it was the first week that that school had opened, and they're in there, like, taping ropes. And I just walk in, I had, like, you know, paid my money, and I'm like, hey, I'm here to train. They're like, well, we're taping ropes and we're cleaning. And I'm like, okay, that's, you know, whatever it is. And then I think Booker came in, and, you know, just, again, you kind of got to earn your spot or, like, show that you're going to stick around, because so many people come in the door, they see how hard it is, and they walk out. So Booker kind of was like, oh, you know, he shook my hand and was like, all right, cool, you know, good luck. And that was kind of it.
So that was the extent of your first meeting with Booker?
Yeah, yeah, it was just like he came in with his kids who were like in a, they had
like
the
a
carriers.
Baby carriage,
yeah,
or
the baby
whatever.
Carriers.
Yeah.
And he's just, it kind of was like, hey, you know, and then off he went. And,
at any point were you a little bit starstruck?
No.
No, not at all.
Yeah, so I don't know, like, were you talking about like comfortability and things like that? Like, I feel like I don't get super stressed about things like that, or I try not to get starstruck, because if I'm to be successful, then you just have to. That's part of the deal. Like, you're just going to be around those people, and you're just going to do these things. Like, you are just going to have to move and be uncomfortable, and you're going to have to meet people who intimidate you, and you're just going to have to be cool with it. So like, there was no like starstruckness. It was just like. It's cool to be here. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
Cool to-
Maybe, but when you saw him, okay, for me, like the first time, right, I got a call from a guy named Paul Cook. He said, come down. Booker wants to meet you, right?
Yeah.
So I'm down there, and I'm sitting outside of his office for an hour and a half in that Monroe building, sitting there waiting for him to take the meeting, right? Mm. And then I walk in for the – and I could hear him.
Yeah.
And he sounds Well, like he sounds. He sounds like Booker T, but he sounds like a massive man.
Intimidating.
He sounds intimidating. And then you walk in, and like the first time I saw him, it was just this mountain of a man.
He's a big
sitting
dude.
Behind a big desk. And a little bit of you, you're just like, whoa, I mean, that's Booker T. You know, you and I are the same age. So like when we were kids, like that was Booker's peak.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
for sure.
From 01 or 2000 to 07, like that was like his biggest years as a professional wrestler. So to see someone who's been on top and worked – main event of WrestleMania,
absolutely,
you know, was the world champion multiple times. Like to have classic matches with Rock and Austin and all these things. Like all that's running through my head for the first time. I mean, me coming in here for the first time. So none of that for you, though.
No, for me because I was like, I'm here to train. I'm here to like do this, and I respected Book, and like it was cool to he was the first legitimate guy that I met.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was too like ignorant to be starstruck. You
know, yeah, you know, like, just, oh, that's just
it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So here we are.
Well, that's what was supposed to happen.
This is
supposed to meet these guys.
The second day I'm there, like MVP shows up. I'm like, yeah, this is how this is going to be forever.
This is going to be all the time.
Like, yeah. Like,
you know what's funny is like I think like the next week after I started, like Khali is there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay. And we're going to get to Khali, obviously, in a minute. But for me, when did you learn all the little things that you have to do in wrestling from a respect factor? Right, I didn't come into wrestling, you know, as a wrestler. I came in strictly as an announcer,
right.
and I had a whole different lifestyle before. So I wasn't in tune with all the little things you have to know in wrestling.
Make sure you shake hands. Make sure you don't touch the chair.
You know, don't speak unless spoken to. Don't do this. Don't do that. Were you aware of all that?
Yeah, because where I came from in Alabama and like North Florida, it's just. It's a bunch of like old continental guys or guys who used to do the territories, and they hold on to that. Like they were maybe like there's some good guys out there for sure, but like some guys who like were probably jobbers in the '80s and things like that. And like you know they get to come in and say, "Oh, I'm a legend. I've been around 30 years, brother." And
make sure
you shake my hand. Make sure, hey, don't you you know, and like you catch heat, brother, for doing this and that. And so like there was all this like. This hype built up, and I thought, you know, like the soft handshake.
Oh, the worker handshake.
The worker handshake.
So for people who don't know, right, it's if when you come into the building, you're supposed to shake everybody's hand,
yeah,
right, to show your respect for everyone working on the show.
Yeah.
And if you're a wrestler, and is it the guy that you're working that night? If you shake, it's everybody.
Everybody.
So if you're a wrestler, you have to.
It's a secret handshake.
So you're supposed to like lightly.
You just barely put your hand in the other guy's hand, and you just barely touch him.
And what does that? What does that tell him?
It tells him that you're a light worker, and you're going to take care of him.
You're safe.
Yeah,
you're not going to hurt him.
And that you're in the know, and you know wrestling's a work, brother.
And you know it's a work,
not
brother.
Real, yeah. So I gave Booker that handshake the first day I came into the gym. He just like crushes my hand.
Oh, of course, yeah. Because he's probably like, I'm going to teach you not to do that now.
Oh, that's probably. That's not what I should do here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I always find that funny because, you know, I still get guys maybe who come into the show, maybe it's their first time here or something like that. Maybe they came from the brother system.
Right.
And they do the light handshake and it kills me.
Yeah.
And it kills me.
Man. And like you kind of lose a little respect, right?
You do.
But
you're
supposed to be the opposite.
Yeah. It's supposed to be them showing you respect.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're just like, you just don't get it.
It's like, yeah, exactly. Because like in this day and age, like, hey, we're all in. We all get it. If you're here, we know you're a wrestler.
It's the crowd knows.
Yeah.
The fans know. The viewers know. We all know the business.
We're just man-to-man shaking hands at this point.
Yeah. We're here to do a job.
That's it.
So at any other job, I shake your hand normal.
Yeah.
So why do I have to
give you that secret handshake?
Do you go out of your way to shake everybody's hand?
No. I feel like if you see, like, just, you know, don't make it an inconvenience for everybody. You know, like, people are having conversations and people are like, oh, excuse me, I didn't shake your hand earlier. And I'm like, okay, well. Like if you see somebody and you're walking by and he's like, "Hey man, how's it going?" I feel like if we just acknowledge that we are both here, then
yeah,
we should be good.
I can see you from across the room.
Oh,
I had someone
Brad,
one time, like after the show, they came up to me and shook my hand again. They're like, "I didn't know if I got your hand, brother." And I'm like, I don't care.
I didn't know if I got
I don't
it.
Care. I'm going to bury you on commentary regardless. No, I'm just kidding.
But the power of commentary.
But I just always find it funny. Like, you know, you learn about all these things and you learn about all the little, you're not supposed to speak unless spoken to, or, you know, all the little things.
The
and
nuances,
But when you get to the, and you and I have both been backstage at WWE, we've been around all the talent over there. No one's like that there.
Could you imagine trying to do that 300 days out of the year, though?
Every time you show up.
Yeah.
Hey, brother.
yeah, man, we got to do this thing again. We got to like play all these games. Like, man, we're just at work. We're just trying to do a job.
No one, I never saw anyone at the locker room go like go from table to table and catering, shaking everybody's hand and making sure they did everything.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like they would. Some people walk up and like, oh, hey, and like you start shaking hands. Everybody turns to you. Okay, cool. Shake hands.
Now, we do have this to talk about because you have somewhat of a reputation, right? From the guys whom I've talked to who have wrestled you in that reality wrestling ring and other places.
Yeah.
You have a small bit of a reputation, and I'm sure you know what I'm going to say, of working a little bit snug.
A little tight.
A little stiff.
Yeah.
Right? A little stiff.
Yeah.
Why?
Just realism, I feel like. You know, what I try to bring out of wrestling is, I mean, you know, you want to get lost in it. And I feel like what I like to bring to the table is like mixing aspects of MMA and fighting into professional wrestling. And there has to be that level of realism for you to get invested. Like if we're going to do, these ideas, I'm trying to get these things across that present the action of MMA, but like the drama of wrestling, the action has to be as legit as possible. And I take it back just the same, but there's got to be that realism.
How do you know though? How do you know when you're going out there with a guy? I mean, do you tell him before, like, hey man, I hit a little hard?
Yeah.
Or do you just have to gauge it in the ring?
Well, you know, I try to obviously as safe, you know, safe with everything.
Yeah, you're not reckless at all.
Exactly.
I'm just saying,
yeah.
But you have the reputation of like, yeah, I'm gonna lay it
in there. Yeah, and you know, I let him know like, hey man, I kind of work tight, and you know, I expect the same in return, and we just kind of bounce off each other.
Anyone ever gotten mad at you?
No, no one's came to me about it. I'm sure people have like came to the office about it, but
yeah. Like, no one ever said to you, hey man, that was a. What did you really have to do that last one right there?
No, one time because I accidentally I was working Aiden Cristiano,
mm-hmm.
and we had this hardcore match at a biker rally.
Of course,
the best.
Yes,
yeah, bikes, chicks, wrestling.
So let's stop right there.
Okay.
Those biker shows, right?
Yeah.
So normally when we work a show, we're working in front of a wrestling audience.
Yeah.
Who understands it, right? And gets what the good guys, the bad guys, they get what's going on,
right?
Those biker shows that we do are very – they're a very different crowd.
Absolutely. Yeah, they just want to see somebody punch somebody in the face.
I mean, not to get too crude here, but like that crowd has thrown tampons at wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
They've yelled racially insensitive language.
Do we have to give out T-shirts so that there weren't topless women on hard camera?
We had to give out T-shirts so there weren't topless – I mean, so this is the crowd that we're in. So you're on – and then everyone's revving their bike. So you're probably already you're juiced up. You're energized because this is a different crowd. And you got to prove to them that, hey, this isn't like a little pansy sport.
Exactly.
You know, we're going to go out there and lay it in. So you had a match with Cristiano.
Yeah. So, you know, this big hardcore match and like we're taking care of each other, but it's, you know, pretty tight. And then I give him the pin. He kicks – or, you know, 1, 2, 3 – and then I just like reached down to like kind of like push him off or whatever, and I just popped him right in the eye. And so everything's fine the whole match, and then I give him a black eye after I pinned him. And he's like, comes back, he's like what are you doing, man? Like we have heat or something? Like, no, it's an accident. But
have you ever had heat with somebody when you were going to work with them beforehand?
No.
Was there anybody who ever you were working that night? Because obviously – most of the time, you don't have control over who you're wrestling, especially here, right?
Yeah.
It's Booker, it's the office planning the matches. Is there anybody who you ever had heat with anywhere in your wrestling career going into the match? And did you take out a little bit of that aggression on them?
No, I can't think of I try to keep it as professional as I can. I would never try to like take aggression out on anybody or like I'm going to give you those receipts out there. You know, it's like whoever it is, like there's going to be days you work with guys you don't want to work with. But you still got to make sure that what you put out is good work. You know what I mean? So I'm always just trying to be as professional as I can.
There was a show that we did at the George R. Brown Convention Center one time. It was Comic Palooza.
Right.
Right. We had a pretty good crowd, big crowd. You were working. I don't remember who you were working. Do you?
I don't remember which one you're talking about. There's a couple of those shows we did.
The second time.
Was it the tag match?
No, I think it was one-on-one. I want to say it was Rob Barnes. Maybe it wasn't.
Okay.
But anyway, you're working this match. Crowd's getting into it, right?
Yeah.
And then you do this dive to the outside.
Oh, yeah. That was the big tag match. Yeah.
Oh, that was the tag match.
Yeah.
Okay. So you do a dive to the outside.
Right.
And I'm sitting right there on the commentary table. And I see you land right on your head.
Right. Just beam myself.
You landed. But here's the thing is a lot of times in wrestling, the fans react to different bumps than what guys in the business react to.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think the classic example is the fans love when Foley goes off the cell.
Yeah.
And then the workers and people in the business appreciate him falling through the cage on the mat. Yeah. Right? That's what we always hear. So there are certain things that the crowd reacts to big that we're like, okay, that was a good spot. But then there are certain things that happen where we're like, oh no,
yeah.
Oh, man. And that was one of the first times for me where I was legitimately concerned for somebody else in the ring. And when you hit your head, I really thought you were seriously injured because you could tell that it rang your bell.
Yeah.
You were laying there for a little bit too long, and it made me really uncomfortable. Yeah. Do you remember that, and what happened?
I do. So it was a tag match, and I come in, I'm bumping everybody around, boom, 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 and I'm supposed to run, jump over this guy who's on the apron, and then I hit one of the guys on the outside. But the guy I bumped in the middle of the ring just laid right across the middle of the ring. So instead of being able to run straight and leap, I have to run, jump over him, run, and then leap out of the ring. So I lose momentum, and the top of my foot catches the top rope, and I just am diving straight at the guy, and then vision change, boom, right into the floor. And I remember like hitting the floor and hit my head, and I hear everybody, ooh, and I'm like, oh, this is not good. So I lay there, like move my foot, move my hand. I'm like, okay, so I can lay here and sell it, and I jump up, slide in the ring, and like gave the guy a suplex. I'm like, you got to keep going.
But were you worried when you hit? Did you think, oh, crap, I may have really screwed myself up?
Yeah, for a second. And then
up?
Once I could like move everything, I was like, okay, at least that's good. This might be something to deal with later on, but for right now, I got to.
Because people who aren't in wrestling, right?
Yeah.
They don't, and I try to explain this sometimes to my girlfriend or friends who I know who don't watch wrestling, don't get wrestling,
right.
Don't know all the little things. Wrestlers are really proud people, there's always that code that you always finish the match. And like even here, we had I remember Ivory broke her arm in the middle of the ring and finished the match,
going,
right?
Yeah.
There's always the classic story of where Vader's eye popped out of his socket and then he shoved it back in.
Yeah.
Were you ever seriously hurt in the ring?
I've been lucky so far. But there are definitely those days when things start to catch up with you. You know, my ankle's banged up, my knee's banged up, and like, okay, really shouldn't work, but a booking's a booking, and you got to take it, you know.
Wrestlers work hurt is what Booker says. They always work hurt. You can't work injured, though.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. But you work hurt, and then injuries are going to happen, I feel, you know. But, you know, like you said, they're very proud people, and like no one wants to admit that they're hurt. No one wants to admit that they can't go. So we push ourselves too far, right?
And a lot of the guys, their bodies break down. Is that ever a concern for you?
Oh, all the time. And it's something.
And I love him to death, but God bless Mick Foley. Like when you watch him walk, it's rough.
Yeah.
It's rough to see.
I mean, like you said, we're young, you know, 24, but just getting older than being 19 and just realizing there's a clock. And it's scary, man. You know, you start counting bumps. And I remember like being in training and I took a clothesline bump and I hit the ground. I'm like, man, that hurt a lot more than it used to.
Than it used to, yeah.
Like, this is not good.
I'm feeling it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's definitely a concern, and it's definitely – you have to think about this isn't something you can do forever. And I feel like a lot of guys don't have that kind of forethought they put into, like, what their career is going to be like.
Yeah, and they don't think ahead. But I remember after that Comic Palooza show, I remember we're having our post-mortem where everyone gathers around in the back, books there, and he gives us the speech, right?
Yeah.
And this was the first time I remember he's given the speech. He was mad about a couple matches. And then he said, you know, guys like Rex Andrews, Rex, he's going to be in WWE within a year. And I remember him saying that. And to me, I was like, yeah, Rex is awesome. And I wondered how you felt about the first time you heard him say that. And what do you think your peers' reaction was?
I've always been surprised when he said that. Like the very first time he said something like that I think I had a match with Q, and I was like walking to the back. I was like, you know, that felt okay. And I walked to the back, and I walked through the curtain, and Book's standing there. And he's like, about to give me a big hug. He's like, you're going to be a big star, kid. And I'm like, man, I don't know why he's saying that, but that's amazing, you know. It's rewarding to feel like validated in, you know, coming as a 19-year-old kid, really skinny, and thinking, telling everybody, like, I'm going to do this. And like everyone's like, there's no chance. And just having at least someone else believe in me, and someone like Booker T and then, you know, Bruce Pritchard and the guys like that just show support and give me, like, you know, just motivating things. it's cool. And like, there's always the, so I remember Booker mentioned me on the Raw pre-show one time.
I remember that.
Right. During you text
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
And I looked it up, watching it, and like, I was on the way to training. I'm like, man, this, you know, that's awesome. So I'm really pumped up, really motivated. Like, hey, you know, maybe good things are coming down the line. I walk in to training and no one's making eye contact with me. You know, it's just, it can be a very selfish business sometimes, I think, right? And I mean, of course, everyone wants to do the best. No one wants to sit back, right? But there's been so many guys who have been very positive as things have gotten better for me. But a lot of guys are kind of like pull back, I feel like. So it's kind of.
And you don't have the same relationship you did
and
before?
You're like, oh, okay. So yeah, you don't really make a lot of friends, I guess. You know what I mean? You just kind of respond as it goes.
So you felt the jealousy from guys?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, without giving up too much and giving too big of a peek behind the curtain, I mean, I'll tell this story and we can ask how you felt about this. But I remember sitting in a booking meeting with Booker, Bruce, Kevin, and myself. And we're all talking. And the idea was thrown around of, you know what, Rex is really good. He should have his own title. We should make a title for Rex. And I remember that was the spark of the conversation that led to the Texas Championship. And it was literally because you were so good, and there was something else going on in the main event with the reality wrestling title going on, a different story at the time that we thought was going to go for a few months. So we were like, well, Rex is the TV champ, but he really deserves his own title. And that's how the Texas title came about. And you were the first Texas champion.
Yeah.
The belt was presented to you after a win by Booker T. And I know a lot of the guys. I didn't talk to any of them, but I just know, and no disrespect, because I understand if someone gets an opportunity you didn't, that you may felt like you deserve because you put your time in.
Absolutely.
You're going to feel it a certain way. But I know guys were jealous.
Oh, yeah.
I know that they were jealous. One, because the title is pretty sweet. It's pretty badass.
Oh, that's a great title.
It's an awesome title by Dave Melikan, who made the belt.
Yeah,
and
Winged Eagle belt.
Winged Eagle belt, of course. And I know guys were jealous. And you got that opportunity. Other people didn't.
Right.
And it's got to – you've got to – like you said, when you had those looks.
Yeah.
It's got to screw with your kind of mental state a little bit, right? I mean, because one, it's this big – positive ego boost, and you're on high.
Yeah,
and then you're like, but then I lose these relationships.
Yeah, so it, as far as ego boost, I try to keep my ego in check as much as possible. Like, yeah, things are going good, but they're certainly not where I want them to be. So, you know, I take it and like, man, this is great. It's an amazing thing, and to be presented with the Texas Championship was, you know,
when did you hear about that?
Kevin told me about it like a few weeks before the show, but I remember like the day of. Going to the booking meeting, and Booker's like, all right, so we're going to do your match, blah, 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 you win. And then he turns to Bruce, like, should I tell him? All right, I'm going to tell him. Like, I already know. Like, yeah. Yeah. But, like, it was cool that, you know, he was going to, like, try to surprise me.
He was excited.
Like, yeah, so, like, he tells me about it. And, yeah, you know, it's, again, to be able to represent reality wrestling and travel around and do all these things, it's amazing. And to, like, to go to these other shows and show people that, like, because, you know, reality wrestling, we're in this own bubble because we don't travel out a lot and we don't do things like that. So people, like, look at us through a certain lens, like, ah, you know, they're overrated, blah, 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 blah. So to get to go out and, like, show that, no, we're a good product. We put on good TV. It's amazing. But, yeah, you have that – you see that from your friends and your coworkers and your colleagues of, like, that bitterness and that jealousy and, oh, well, I would be in that position if not for this, this, this. And oh, it's just because of book likes or whatever it is. And, yeah, I think that's like the first big, like, that's the business. Like,
yeah.
That's what it is, you know? And what am I supposed to do? Like, say no, because you're upset about it. Like, no, I'm going to, like,
yeah, I'm no, I'm taking this title.
Comes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. And, you know, we're always so worried about getting heat. You know, we don't want heat with other guys. And I remember Booker, he invited me to his house for, I thought it was just like a little meeting. Right,
yeah.
So I pull up to his house, and you know, it's the first time I'm there, and I'm kind of like, oh man, this is Booker T's house,
right?
And I walk in, and I realize it was Thanksgiving that
he was
celebrating Thanksgiving with his family, and I'm sitting there eating, and I'm, you know, we're talking, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to get so much heat. You know, and that's sort of, that was the first, you know, instead of enjoying the experience of being at Booker T and Sharmell Huffman's house for Thanksgiving, I'm worried about getting heat, right? And I've told that story before, but I mean, then I got to a point to where I was just kind of like, you know what? They can go screw themselves. I mean, I work for what I work for.
Right.
And if I'm giving an opportunity or I earn something or I'm close with Booker or Bruce or Kevin or I have influence in this or whatever – it's not because it was handed to me.
Yeah.
It's because I earned that spot.
Exactly. And if you were given a spot and you didn't deserve it or you failed at that spot, they're going to take it away from you.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to – it's not – just – it's not a, like a
friend's business. Well, what people don't understand about wrestling is it's not a friend's business.
Yeah.
You don't play favorites.
Right.
You really don't. You might like a guy, but he's awful.
Yeah,
or exactly. She's awful.
Like, oh, great guy. But
great person, but you know, when the bell rings, it goes to hell.
That's
you know
it,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Or they don't know how to get along in the backstage. And if you show and prove, you're going to earn spots. And I think another one is Reality Wrestling had an opportunity. Booker got a phone call from the Great Khali.
Yeah.
And Great Khali was like, I'm opening a school in India. I want some of your guys to come train the wrestlers there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first name. I remember when the call came in, like the first couple names. It was like, okay, we're going to send Rex. We're going to send Lockhart. We're going to – you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you were the first one to go over, right?
I was
or the only one.
Yeah.
The only one to go over.
Yeah.
And when you got the phone call from Book, hey, kid, you're going to India.
Yeah.
To train guys with the Great Khali.
Yeah.
You were just like, let's go?
Yeah. He was like, do you want to live in India? I was like, yeah, I mean, of course. So like, he's like, all right, cool. Like, meet me at the gym in 20 minutes or whatever. So like, I drive to the gym. Book's there. Khali's there. And we just kind of set it up from there. You'd be paid X amount. You'll live there for 4 months. And we'll do – this is the whole deal. And
so kind of you get on the plane.
Yeah.
How long is the flight?
It was like a 16-hour day.
16-hour day.
Like, go to Germany, then go to India.
And you land in India.
Yep.
What's your first impression?
Reality check. It's, you know, you walk out of the airport, like the smell is hitting, and just the city is like, man, you know, it's just not what I expected. I remember getting in the Jeep that they picked me up in, and then like we started going down the road, and then immediately I noticed there's like no road rules whatsoever. People are cutting in and out, honking their horns, blah, 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 and like not in the proper lanes. There's like nothing. They're just not driving to any kind of form. And then I see this like little girl under an underpass by herself, and she's like laying out a blanket, and she's like 6 or 7, and I'm like, yeah, you see that anywhere? But there was just so much. So we drove from New Delhi to Punjab, which is like an 8-hour drive, and throughout that drive, I saw so much poverty and so much. I just thought there was a baseline like this is how people live, and that's just me being ignorant and being. Spoiled like my whole life, right? And then
or just
that,
American.
Just American.
Yeah. We have a different expectation than the rest of the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I get over there and I just see like what just life is like throughout this country. And I'm like, man, this is not what I expected. It was an intense experience.
And there are a lot of interesting things that happened to you in India.
Yeah.
But you're going in there and you meet with Khali, and the Great Khali over there, from what I remember you telling me, is like a god over there.
He's a megastar, yeah.
He's like he is like Jay-Z and Beyonce. He's like whomever, Brad Pitt. He is George Clooney. He is like the biggest thing.
Absolutely.
Literally and figuratively.
Exactly, yeah. We were driving through a town and like they blocked the road. Just a crowd of people just trying to get to the car. And then like they swarm the car. They're all beating on the car, chanting. It's just like this welcome, like Ali, I can't remember what it was, but it was like some kind of chant, and they're all just like chanting, and the car's kind of rocking and whatever, and like the cops are trying to pull people off, and they just can't get them away, just for us to drive through the city to the next like thing that we're going to, like they, but this wasn't
because when it's, I guess when it's such a city of poverty, this is a guy who made it, went to America, made a bunch of money,
right?
See him on TV,
yeah.
I mean, they must think this is the only, you know. Let me be attached to this guy. Maybe he'll give me some money, or maybe he'll put me on.
It didn't even seem like that. It was that they just wanted to touch him and see him and just be around him. You know, like touching shoes is like a big sign of respect.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, he walks in and there's just like hundreds of people just trying to reach and trying to just.
So they like kneel down and touch shoes. That's like the thing in India.
Yeah, they just reach down, touch a shoe. Like so, when I'm training guys, they would like come up, shake my hand, touch my shoe. I was like,
wow, was that just not like a super trip?
It was a little different, yeah. The level of respect over there is insane. And just being attached to Kali was crazy. Like, I got to... I was told, like, Kali comes into my room. I was, like, living at the gym. I had, like, my own quarters or whatever. And there's, like, a dojo upstairs, blah, blah, blah. And he comes in. He's like, hey, we're doing... I'm doing a media thing. Do you want to come? I was like, oh, yeah, cool, whatever. So I get in the car with him, and we drive off into the mountains, like, four-hour drive. And we go up, and we get there, and I find out it's a political rally for, like, the governor. Like
whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. So, like, we're going in, and then we come up on stage, and they're like, Kali, blah, blah, and then, like, me. And I'm just there, and it's just me and him, and, like, they walk us up, and they put these, like, these necklaces on us, like these ornamental necklaces, and they sit us down, and like there's Miss India is to my left, and like Kali's.
How did Miss India look?
We have different beauty standards, I'd say. but we're up there, and like,
good.
Yeah, they're doing this, like, thousands of people in the pouring rain, and this guy's like just giving this whole speech. I'm like, this guy could be like.
He could be a dictator,
he could
terrorist,
be Indian Hitler, and I have no idea what he's saying. And I'm just like up on stage giving the thumbs up, like, yeah, this is great. it was a crazy experience, and like the whole time we're up there, people are just trying to jump on the stage, and cops having to like throw them off the stage by hand just to keep them away from like Kali and all these guys. It was crazy.
I mean, that's a big jump from Dothan, Alabama.
Yeah,
to seeing like a political rally in India,
yeah, exactly.
Where you're being treated like royalty.
Wrestling's weird, man.
Wrestling's a weird business. So when you're over there, you ended up in the hospital more than once, right?
No, just one time.
Just one time. Because I remember opening Facebook one morning and scrolling through,
yeah.
And I see a picture of you laying in a hospital bed.
Yeah.
And I was like, never going to India.
Yeah, so well, that was kind of my fault. So we're driving around, and the guy's driving me is like, hey, do you want a burger? And I was like, whoa. I'm very interested in what a Punjabi burger is like, because there's no beef. So, like, one, what does it taste like? What's in it?
So there's no beef in India?
Not in Punjab.
In Punjab. Yeah. And why is that? Do you know?
It's for the cows.
It's a religious thing?
Sacred.
Okay, the cow is sacred.
Yeah, so
okay.
Like, no beef. It's all goat, chicken, stuff like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I decided that it was a good idea to eat a roadside burger in Punjab. Yeah, so, like, the next day, obviously terribly sick. I could go to the hospital for food poisoning, dehydrated, all that stuff. On the way to the hospital, because there's no driving rules, car wreck.
Oh, so, my God.
Which makes the front page of the paper, because Kali's in a car wreck, right? So I'm like, I just remember like sitting in the back seat, and I'm just like holding my stomach, and I'm like, I feel like I'm dying. And then boom, and I'm like, yeah, that might as well happen. Like,
why not?
Yeah,
just pile on. Add on.
Like, of course. Yeah, so you know that happened. I fractured my ankle while I was there. It was a crazy experience. It was an amazing experience, though. You know, being able to teach those guys from like ground level, nothing. Didn't speak the same language with a lot of them. Like 60% spoke English. The other half didn't even speak Hindi. So like, it was double translated to get to a guy. But I'm trying to teach him how to do a headlock and stuff like that. Trying to explain psychology to him.
Yeah,
like, it was an amazing experience.
But a massive challenge.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Your trip though was cut short. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't want to talk about it, we can move right past. But let me say this. So for me, growing up, right, the thing I look forward to after every day of school was I'd walk out of school. I knew right what street corner to go to, and my grandmother would be sitting there in her 1996 purple Jeep Grand Cherokee, Laredo edition.
Yeah.
Reading her Bible, you know, every day.
Man.
And I'd get in the car, and she'd drive me to like a McDonald's or whatever. We'd get a little food. We'd go home, and I'd ask her a million questions, listen to her stories, listen to my grandfather's stories. And, you know, I did that my entire life.
Yeah.
And then around 18, she had been battling Parkinson's disease at that time for like 7 years. And she was, you know, in her early 80s or maybe early mid-80s. And she needed to go to an assisted living facility. And I didn't realize it at 18 – but that was really going to be a big deal, you know, because here's a woman who always took care of me from Decatur, Alabama, and now I have to do the other, right? And I have to take care of her.
Right.
So I took care of her, you know, with my family for 5 years, almost 6 years. She battled Parkinson's, lived to 90, blessing, right? She passed away in November. Awful, because I have a connection with her like I had with no one else.
Right.
And it's the most inexplicable thing, right? A couple weeks ago, we did a military funeral for her and my grandfather, who was in World War II. And I had to give the eulogy for both of them, right? And standing up there after the 21-gun salute, after the presentation of the flag, after they – you know, a serviceman thanks me and my family, you know, on behalf of the President of the United States. You know, it's a very heavy feeling to Absolutely. Get up there and have to eulogize somebody that you love, but two people,
yeah.
let alone one. And it was super hard. Mm-hmm. And I'm still dealing with it today. And it's not something you just get over.
Right.
Your trip was cut short because you had an awful thing happen to you.
Yeah. My father passed away while I was over there. I just remember like 3 a.m. in India, just waking up, looking at my phone, and there's just, you know, 15 calls, call home, call home, call home. And I kind of knew what it was. My dad was older.
Yeah, because we both have older parents as well. That's another thing that we have a parallel. My dad's 72.
Yeah, yeah. My dad was 78 when he passed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it. He'd always been sick, and he kind of been like the same thing, like in and out of ICUs and recovery units for diabetes and whatnot. Kali was amazing, and like that night got me in a plane to get back home, and I made it over here so I could like be there for his funeral and all those things. And I think that's kind of what just kickstarted me to really make something happen with my career and like my life. You know, just thinking about what my, you know, I remember before I left, I went and saw my dad, and it was like a month before I left, and it was like just kind of telling me, you know, you're gonna be gone a long time, and a lot of things can happen in that time, but he wanted me to be successful, and he knew that it was like, you got to go. Like he never. So I moved out here originally to do the school, and I went back home because he got sick. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, you don't do that. He sent me back out. He's like, you don't hang your life on somebody else. And you don't wait for whatever to happen to somebody. Like you have to do your own thing, and you have to be successful. And, I just remember my dad telling me that. And, you know, I go by Rex Andrews. It's a part of my name, but it was his name. And it's kind of, you know, something that I want to make him proud with.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, so when my grandmother's going through all this stuff, right, my girlfriend and I would go on vacation, like, every year. Like, we'd go to New York, and then we'd go to Mexico, and then we went to L.A., right? It was like our little tradition around her birthday, around my girlfriend's birthday. And every time – when I got – like right when I got on the plane, I would think to myself, I hope I don't get a call about my grandmother when I'm not home.
Yeah.
That has to be the worst thing ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that had to be the worst plane ride and everything, right?
Yeah. I remember like, you know, calling my girlfriend at the time, and she's crying, and she tells me, you know, your dad's passed away. And having – an older dad, I was kind of always like preparing myself for that, and I knew.
I understand.
Yeah, so I remember like initially it didn't hit me that hard, and I went up and I sat on the roof of the gym, and it's kind of like the sun was coming up and all that, and I'm just kind of sitting out there, I was thinking about it, and it's terrible to not be there, but I think a lot, like what if I was there like that last day or whatever, and then I remember my dad like. When he was sick and he's in the ICU, we went to see him, and like the preacher's there, and he's like, you know, do you have your affairs in order and this and that? And my sister's there, and she starts crying. He's like, I don't know what everybody's wasting their time crying for. Like that doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
So, like, when I'm sitting up there and I'm in India, and I'm just thinking about that. And like, you know, he wants you to just like pick up and, you know, keep going forward.
So keep on trucking.
Yeah. It was hard to deal with. And like, I knew I had to be there, and it was good I got to get back in time to say goodbye to him and all that. And, be there for my sisters and my family. But, you know,
did you feel like, so for, you know, my dad was born 45. I guess your dad was like what, late 30s or early 40s? When was he born? Do you know?
37.
37. Yeah. So yeah, late 30s. Right. There's something about that generation to where I feel like us being 24.
Yeah.
having older parents for me has made me a completely different person than all of my contemporaries, right? For the most part. I look at things differently. I interact with people differently. I have a different worldview than most people my age.
Yeah.
Because you kind of got instilled the greatest generation of people mm-hmm. was the late teens to the early 50s.
Yeah, they went through some stuff.
They all saw some stuff.
They had some hard times.
I mean, your father and mine saw a lot of things. Saw world wars. Saw presidential assassinations, resignations, civil rights movements.
Hard times.
A lot of hard times. A lot of poverty working their way up.
Absolutely.
Not a lot of opportunity out there. I mean, my dad was 11 years old, shining shoes in the barrio, trying to get out of there.
Yeah.
You know. And I'm sure your dad with a similar story.
Yeah.
And I feel like I greatly benefited. Right? You feel like that same way?
I do. Yeah. I get a lot of people tell me. I'm sure that the same for you, that we don't seem to be 24.
Yeah,
you
know? Old soul,
old
right?
Old soul, yeah.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Yeah, like it just doesn't make sense. Like, someone told me, like, your age is an illusion. Like, I don't know what that means.
I don't know.
But, like, but it's – I don't know. Maybe that's what it comes from, is just having a more grounded generation, right? Because, my mom is younger, so talking to her is a very different life perspective than talking mm-hmm. to my dad.
She was much younger?
Yeah, she was 20 years younger.
Okay.
So she was like a 60s kid
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that, you know. I think so. I think just better, more grounded, you know, more just realistic with things, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like people who don't have that, like it – because I talk to my friends who have – because I have older brothers too.
Okay.
So my oldest brother's nearing 50. Right.
Oh wow.
So we have a spread out family, and I have older sister, older brother.
They're all
married, kids, all that.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just funny to for me, just to be around. And do you feel like you're more connected with older people?
Yeah. Doing personal training, I meet a lot of old people, and mm-hmm. one of my favorite people in the world is like 77 year old guy I train with. Just because I'm talking books with him. I'm talking, you know, just. And man, you can learn so much from talking to older people, you know?
It was the greatest thing. When my grandmother was in the facility she was, you know, there were people there who were in their late 90s.
Yeah.
Who were still firing on all eight.
They've been around, yeah.
And talking to them and just hearing their stories. And you know, you just pick up so much information. And I feel like the elderly, and you'll probably agree with this, the elderly in our society, they're supposed to be treated with respect, but they probably get the least amount of respect.
Yeah, I feel like that's a it's a mistake a lot of people make in taking people at surface value. Is like maybe they see someone who is older and they're beat down and they think of them as weak, or they think of them as ignorant to like what's new. But man, they have so much experience. Like they know what's going on, you know?
And they tell you a million things and you're like, you don't know what you're talking about. And then you figure it out and you're like, oh,
man, I should have listened. Man, that's what you were talking about. You're just too dumb to notice.
Too dumb to notice.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like the same life lessons apply in wrestling.
Yeah.
Right? It's the little things. It's you know, Booker always preaches the yes, ma'am, no, sir, mm-hmm. shake the hand, respect. And if people like you, you're always going to have a job and do what you say you're going to do.
Yeah.
And they all apply here, but it's the little things in wrestling. So I want to ask you this before we wrap up here. I remember the first time I was backstage at WWE.
Right.
And it's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you see catering, you see the stars, you see Vince, you see Stephanie, you see Hunter, you see all these people,
yeah.
right? And the young wrestling fan in you is freaking out inside.
Yeah.
Just going nuts. What was your first experience like at WWE?
It was pretty overwhelming. You know, I was, I think, 19 or 20 at the time, and Booker just like calls me in, like, hey, you're going to TV tomorrow or Monday. Tomorrow, because there was a pay-per-view. So like we had a show Saturday and he's like, just, do you have a suit? I'm like, I mean, I guess I can get one. So like, I'm like scrambling to get things together. And it was me and Abel Andrew Jackson went, and Abel had a ton of experience, whatever. And I get there and yeah, it was just that like, okay. I didn't know how to handle myself, you know, like I'm trying to, what do I do? Do I shake this person's hand? Do I not shake this person? Like, it was all those things that, like, we talked about. Like,
we talked about earlier, yeah.
Stupid. We should let them go. But, like, when you're in that situation and it's, like, high pressure and you're like, I don't want to make anybody mad. So you're just trying to, you know, I don't want to get too little food at catering, but I don't want to get too much food at catering. So, like, it's all these things that, like.
I went through the same thing, yeah.
It's so stressful. But I realized, you know, everybody, you know, you always hear independent guys and wrestlers, they always say, I'm going to make it because it's my dream or because I want it more than anybody. Yeah, but have you earned it? Like, do you work harder than anybody? Do you – would somebody pay money? To, you know, and just seeing it as a corporate thing and seeing it as a job was what I really got out of it, like that first time being up there. And I remember just being like so nervous and going to do my match in front of like Regal and the agents or whatever. And like the feedback was like you did good. I was surprised. I was like, well, that's like – that's halfway good, I guess.
You got to think half the guys they see or 90% of the guys they see have like nothing.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. They're just trying to – you know, they're babysitting to get extras. Yeah, but, I was ignorant to the level – you know, everybody thinks that they're right there. You know, like – well, it's like everybody thinks they're a writer. Everybody thinks they're an artist until they put themselves side by side with like a – the real deal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And being at WWE, you're the real deal. And I was like, oh, that's not where I'm at. Like, not at this point. Like,
these people know way more than me.
Exactly. Yeah, these are pros.
I remember, though, a few months ago, you and I were backstage at SmackDown.
Yeah.
Live. And at the Toyota Center. We were back there, and there was like this little part, I guess, where when the Rockets are normally playing, like that's where they would come out of the tunnel over there. And we're standing over there. And I think we're watching – I can't remember who we were watching. They were watching Dean Ambrose wrestle somebody in the main event, right?
Right.
And the Miz. Yeah, I think he's wrestling the Miz in the main event. And we're sitting there watching him. And I was looking at you, and you just had this look like, yep, if I was unsure at any other time in my life, I'm definitely sure this is where I want to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember talking to you one time, and you're like, yeah, you know, I think I'll go to Japan or maybe go down to Mexico or, you know, travel a little bit, do the independent thing and da-da-da. And I remember talking to you and you saying that, and I was always kind of like, oh, okay, I mean, that's what he wants to do. That's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
But when I saw you there that night, and you probably made that decision before that, but that's when I see you and I'm like, oh, okay, this is where he wants to be.
For sure, yeah. I think that's the cop-out answer is, I just want to be – make my money on the indies. I want to do the work and do the travel, blah, blah, blah. I've always wanted to be WWE superstar. I think the realist in me was like, you might not have what it takes to be there. So you have to like recognize that maybe is not an option. And I still recognize that, you know, maybe that call never comes. But to be successful in wrestling is my ultimate goal. But yeah, that is the place to be, you know, to be in an arena and being able to, be on that stage doing that work. That's where it's got to be.
It's
then you make a similar decision though, right? Where you're like, maybe I could do this.
Yeah, I think I was kind of like, hey, you know what?
Yeah, hey,
this is so bad.
Yeah,
and then I remember I being at the Rumble in January.
Yeah,
and I remember walking through Booker and I get there and we're walking through the backstage going to catering and. Sitting at the table, and I remember it was me, Booker, Charmel, Jerry Lawler, Shawn Michaels sitting at the table.
Yeah.
And they're all sitting and talking, and they're like, laughing, and da da da. And then whomever walks by, and then blah 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 walks by. And then you see, there's blah blah. And then I remember I'm backstage when Booker was about to leave, he finished the pre-show. I'm standing backstage, and Goldberg's there. And then I see Brock walk around the corner. And then as I'm trying to find the elevator, go to my seat, there's Taker. And you're just kind of like, man, yeah, this is pretty crazy. And
it's the real deal.
It's the real deal.
Yeah.
And for people who maybe are just fans or aren't wrestling fans or whomever is listening to this, you'd really – to be that close to something you've thought about so many times – and to be there in the mix with everybody, it makes you want it so much more. But also, and I'm sure this is what happened to you, it makes it seem obtainable.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's when it's this thing that you can't see or touch and it's just it exists out there and you see it on TV and you're like, oh, that's where I'll be. But when you're there and you're standing side by side with these guys as they're going over their matches and they're talking about like their work and you're like, oh, I can do this. Like this is right here. It's just the right opportunity to be a part of it.
All right. Well, since you're a wrestler, I got to ask,
This is just this is one of those softball questions.
Right.
Pick one. Favorite WrestleMania is?
Oh, WrestleMania 20.
WrestleMania 20?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the first one I watched on pay-per-view.
Exactly. For
is
me
it
too.
For you too? Look yeah. at that. Yeah. Well, what did I say? Parallel
exactly.
here.
Yeah, I saw that. And
what's your favorite match on the card?
Eddie Guerrero and Kurt Angle.
Yeah. God, so good.
So good. The whole show just blew me away. It was the spectacle that me as a 9-year-old needed. And yeah, just watching that, I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is the coolest thing ever, man.
Such a great Mania. Yeah. Underrated, I feel.
I think so, too. I think a lot of people put it down, but yeah. it's awesome.
Because they bring up the Goldberg match or they bring up whatever. Yeah. But it's a great WrestleMania.
Absolutely.
Well, you have a website, RexAndrewsGrapples.com.
That's it, yeah.
At RexAndrews on Twitter.
Yep, at RexAndrewsGrapples on Instagram.
Two more things.
Okay.
Or one more thing.
Okay.
The domino in the tights is what?
It is a connection I have with my dad. We used to – he was a big gambler. We'd always play dominoes. And it's where he delivered a lot of life lessons to me. And it is a connection for me for that, and it kind of reminds me of my – like where I'm coming from.
Rex, I'm sure that as tough as it is that he's not around anymore, I'm sure he's a constant motivator – a daily reminder to follow your dreams, and if he was here, he'd be proud of the Texas champ.
I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, thank you.